Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's episode, Ben Gulker and I talk about the Detroit Pistons' disappointing NBA draft lottery results. The Pistons, with the third best odds, fell two slots to the fifth overall pick. Ben Gulker and I try to find the silver lining, run through a quick mock draft, and talk about the eyebrow-raising DeAndre Ayton situation in Phoenix. Could DeAndre Ayton be more obtainable than we thought? As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have the conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing, because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this offseason. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a post-NBA draft lottery episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. Kind of, sort of pleased to be joined by my co-host, Ben Gulker. Ben, how's it going?
Hey, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number five.
Yeah. Number five. The Pistons got the fifth pick in the draft. How do we feel? I saw your tweet. You're like, that's suboptimal.
Yeah, man, I heard myself say this is devastating, and my wife didn't know what I was talking about. She looked at me, like, gave me the side eye, like, what are you talking about? And I didn't expect to feel so sad. I had been prepping myself for disappointment and still feel absolutely completely disappointed. ESPN's mock that's on the TV right now, Giovanni, I always forgot to say his last name. They've got Keegan Murray going number five. That just flashed up on the TV. I'm having a hard time getting excited about that. I don't know. Maybe an adequate player at five, maybe not. Doesn't feel game-changing to me at the moment, though, Laz. Doesn't feel game-changing, I got to be honest.
No, this is obviously very disappointing. You're right. I think statistically this was the most likely outcome of any individual pick was the fifth overall pick, and so this shouldn't be surprising, but it is. I don't know, it's just like all the good vibes of the season, all the karmic implications of getting the number one overall pick last year and being like, oh, we can turn this thing around, is that, you know, life kind of gets in the way sometimes. But I will say that I think if you gave me like the option of getting the fifth overall pick in last year's draft and the first overall pick in this year's draft, like I wouldn't take it. I think they got the first overall pick in the draft that mattered more, and we'll just have to see how We'll see. I have to see how this draft plays out, but I think getting Cade Cunningham, who's better than any prospect in this year's class, is ultimately more deterministic for the fate of the franchise than anything that happened tonight, which is good because tonight kind of sucks. So Keegan Murray, you mentioned that as a potential draft pick. That's what ESPN was saying. We do know, or we have heard from both. We have heard from basically all of the beat writers that Keegan Murray is a guy that they have looked at pretty heavily over the course of like the scouting evaluation pre-draft process. Ben, what specifically makes you so tepid about the idea of a Keegan Murray on the Detroit Pistons?
So, you know, I don't even know if it's about Keegan Murray, to be perfectly honest with you. I think That's there fair. Was just this part of me. So, like, I tweeted this out earlier today. Like, even a year ago, Laz, as we were amping up right around this time, right, I was, as people have been listening to the pod for a while know, I have not been a draft guy the past, I don't know, like, decade, really. Like, I just...
With good reason.
Yeah, with good reason, right? Like, I mean, we've been end of the lottery. We haven't hit on any of the big prospects. I mean, Drummond was the closest thing we had to a hit, and he was so polarizing for so many people. Like,
yeah, that in and of itself is a story, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it was so, like, I just was so burned out on it, and I don't know, last year it seemed obvious to me that Cade was the pick, so once we won the lottery, I just didn't look at it anymore. To me, it was either Mobley or Cade, and it was like, okay, flip a coin, and then ultimately it was just Cade, right? So, like, okay, this year, like, I tweeted this out, like, I have spent a lot of time looking at, like, the top 3, 4, 5 guys, and why am I tepid about a guy like Murray? It's because I honestly got invested last. That's the honest answer. It's not rational. It's not logical. I was seriously, like, getting excited about you know, the amazing articles that the writers have been putting up on the Detroit Bad Boys blog, for example. I've been diving into those clips and into those stats and into thinking about, like, what if we land one of these top 3 or 4 guys and we've got 2 of the top 5 talents in the NBA team on the same roster and we have a decade worth of basketball to be excited about in Detroit. And, like, no, Keegan Murray could absolutely be a starting caliber player and an above average power forward and could absolutely work well with Cade Cunningham, but, like, it just feels underwhelming, and that's how I feel about it right now. That's just the honest spur of the moment emotional cathartic reaction that I'm feeling, and that, you know, a week from now, Laz, I'll probably feel differently. And, you know, honestly, like, I might even be talking myself into reaching for a guy like Mathurin, to be honest with you. Like, I might be, he's a guy who's been floating around like the 6, 7, 8 range. Like, mm-hmm. I might even be talking to myself, like, maybe we need to reach for a guy like that. But tonight, I think it's just sort of like popping a balloon, taking the wind out of the sails, you know? That's just how I'm feeling.
No, I think that's fair. Yeah, I definitely get some of that. I have been more invested than you have been in the past with regards to the draft. Like, specifically the first year of Troy Weaver's tenure when he grabbed 3 first round picks. But yeah, last year we all just kind of got to be a little bit lazy in our draft analysis. It's like, oh, hey, we got the number 1 pick. Oh, hey, look, this guy's the best prospect. Why don't we just take him? It's like, oh, cool. Yeah. So, so yeah, not having to do this time around, I think will be a better, it'll be better for the content. And you mentioned the NBA draft review series that the other writers at Detroit Bad Boys have been putting on and this week. And, like, shout out to Sean, for our feelers leader, Sean Corp, for putting all that data and all that film together in a place where it's easily accessible for our writers to access and be able to make their own judgments about some of the prospects at the top of this year's class. But yeah, I think I don't want to invalidate your feelings. I think you're right. I think you're right to be disappointed. I feel like that scene in Arrested Development where Jason Bateman, like, opens the refrigerator and he sees the brown bag that says, like, dead dove, like, do not eat. And he looks in and he's like, I don't know what I expected. Like, I don't know what I expected. Like, I don't know what I expected. Like, this is, Last year was an aberration. That's an atypical draft result. Like, this is how it normally goes for for like one of the 29 NBA franchises, and like it was us this year. I will say, though, you spoke about Mathurin as a guy that was interesting to you. One other interesting draft lottery result that I wanted to note for the people, the Portland Trailblazers ended up with the 7th overall pick. I think that's a drop from one spot. You think that's doable for a Jeremy Grant trade? You think if we're tepid on Keegan Murray and Keegan Murray is going to go 5, do you think Portland kind of looks up and says to themselves, like, I don't think there's anybody better than Jeremy Grant that we could get in this year's class, and they decide to just make that deal a reality?
I mean, they still got the accelerated timeline, right? I mean, Damian Lillard, excuse me, is not getting any younger, is what I meant to say. So, yeah, I mean, who's there at 7 that's going to make the immediate impact to push them into what's still a very competitive Western Conference? I mean, they got a long way to go in a short amount of time to get there. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at the top 15 picks on just about every big board that's out there. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who they're going to get at 7 who's going to push them, right? So I think that's they've still got to be thinking about acquiring some veteran guys who are more seasoned and maybe a little more productive. I don't think they've got 2 years to wait.
No, absolutely. And so does the thought of perhaps like 2 picks in the top 7, like, is that reason to be slightly more excited, even if they're 5 and 7 and not like 2 and 7?
So that's always attractive to me, Laz. And I think so here's where the frontal cortex, the prefrontal cortex, starts kicking in a little bit, right? Like the later evolutionary brain starts to kick in. So like we don't spring into the top 3, which means we're less likely to get that super high impact player, which means what is the timeline, right? The timeline probably gets a little bit longer. So Jeremy Grant certainly becomes the desire to move him, I think, probably becomes a little bit stronger. And so, yeah, I mean, I become, even if I'm Troy Weaver, I become even more interested in moving him. And if that opportunity is on the table, I'm certainly pursuing it. Yeah. Because I do think, I mean, I do agree. If you look at the top 10 on just about anybody's big board, it's pretty easy to talk yourself into having you can find 2 quality guys that I think you can talk yourself into fitting with Cade Cunningham. That, I mean, even if you think you've got 1 bench guy and 1 starting guy, I think you've got 2 quality rotation players in that mix. I think you can feel pretty confident about that.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that you know, more bites at the apple is good. You can find, you still find really good players outside of the, I think it's like the top like 8 picks. And so, you know, you never know what can happen with Troy Weaver. We've seen that 2 years ago. And so, you know, anything is possible. I will say that Sean Hyken, who writes for Bleacher Report and is pretty plugged into the Portland Trailblazers front office and coaching staff situation. I think he lives out in Portland. He tweeted, and I retweeted, that he thought the Blazers would still be interested in trading that pick, not like specifically for Jeremy Grant, but just like in general. And like, I don't know if you looked at like the free agency or trade market, but there's not like a whole bunch of super attractive players out there. Yeah. And so I could see something like that happening. I think if they're able to walk away from this with like Keegan Murray and Benedict Mathurin, or even like Keegan Murray and like Jalen Duren, or, you know, Shaedon Sharpe. And, well, if you took Sharpe, you wouldn't take Mathurin. So, you could take Shaedon Sharpe and like another big and just kind of go from there. I think that's interesting. If you assume a Jeremy Grant for 7 trade is going to happen, which I'm going to do because it's better podcast content. If you assume that, then there are a lot more interesting permutations of draft night in Detroit. If you don't assume that, then like, yeah, this is looking kind of rough. But
you assume a wing and a big, right? And then you take best available wing at or both. Big with your first one, and then you take best of I'm with you.
And to like head off a question I can like see happening in my mind. It's like, well, Laz, like if they trade Jeremy Grant for 7 and they have 5, can you package 5 and 7 for 3? And just like, no one's gonna do that. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, the trade value chart like might say that makes sense, but like no one's gonna do that. It's that's okay.
Well, I think especially this draft, right? Like the top 3, I think feel pretty solidified to me. I mean, that seemed pretty solidified too in the draft coverage for anybody who watched the first 15 minutes. I mean, it consensus seems pretty clear.
What did you think of like Chet Holmgren like just like towering over David Robinson though?
Did you see that too?
Yes.
I wasn't sure if it was like the optical illusion of Chet being like a toothpick next to like the monstrous man that is David Robinson or what. But yeah, that was super interesting to me.
Yeah, I felt really bad for Chet's Taylor, who's just got like nothing to work with, right?
And I don't know if you caught the shot where it was like close to the ground, but Chet had like white sneaker socks on and there was like 3 inches of calf, like just skin when he was sitting down. Yeah, that Taylor didn't earn his money is all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, Chet needs that NBA paycheck for sure.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Ben. So anything else notable? Oh, and risers and fallers, Sacramento. Sacramento jumped the Pistons to get the 4th overall pick. That's a nasty bit of karma. Maybe, perhaps, we can count on Sacramento doing something dumb to make one of the top 3 guys available. Oh, no, they're picking 4th. Never mind.
You can count on Sacramento to do something dumb. I mean, you just don't know what it's going to be.
That's true. But if the top 3 guys are gone, it's like we can't take advantage as much of their idiocy. Oklahoma City also jumped into the 2nd overall spot, which hardly seems fair since they have like 80 trillion picks.
Seriously. That
one of them actually hit.
Well, and historically, the way they've wasted the talent, I mean, think about it. Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Ibaka, like all the talent they have just squandered. It's incredible.
They took Jeff Green 5, if I remember correctly. And like Jeff Green had a really good, really long NBA career, still in the league, despite you know like the heart thing and everything. Yeah. But like, yeah, that was not a good allocation of resources. Absolutely. I will say, it's like if they get 2, maybe they like stop tanking, or maybe you know, Paolo's just like sitting 40 games like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is again, and we kind of go from there. Yeah, they have a hideous tanking record. And we can speak from experience since we know what tanking looks like. I wanted to do like a real quick run through of what we think the like top 7 picks are going to be based on the other rosters, based on like who we think the draft needs are. So Orlando did win the lottery. We should mention that. They got the number 1 overall pick. Which of the 3 bigs makes the most sense in Orlando, who already has a bunch of bigs?
Okay, so I'm gonna go just based on what the buzz I saw on Twitter, which is I'm eyeballing tweets. Mm-hmm. I saw Chet a lot, but I found that kind of surprising. So I'll just say that's what I was eyeballing from Twitter.
Chet and Mo Bamba on the floor at the same time would be funny. Really funny.
That'd be funny, right?
Yeah, that's good. That is good. That's good video content. I don't know if it'd be effective. And like Wendell Carter Jr. was playing really well for them towards the end of the year. Like, I don't know. All right, Chet off the board at 1, 2 Orlando. OKC needs everything. Who do you think they would take in?
Oh, OKC. They need everything, right? I mean,
they need. Well, their guard room is kind of crowded, right? They have Shai and Dort and Giddy and Trey Mann. And what's his name? The other French point guard, Maladon. Like they probably are happy with the ability to take a big man, but like I don't know which big man like fits what they want to do, because so far all we've seen them want to do is lose.
Yeah, I don't know if they know what they want to do, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm gonna say Jabari.
All right, I don't mind it. Jabari. Jabari 2 to OKC. So are we just penciling in Houston taking Paolo then?
I think 3? So. I think we kind of have to, right? I mean, that's the top 3.
Yeah. Houston really doesn't need a guard. I think the, for me, like the funniest outcome of the night was going to be Houston at 4 where like Jaden Ivey was going to be like staring them in the face, but they already have like a super crowded guard room. But luckily they avoid that fate. I will say a Paolo Alperen Şengün front court, not going to play any defense at all and would be just hilarious to watch. Sacramento at four. This is like the real wild card, right? Because Sacramento pulled off the Sabonis trade, still managed to miss the playoffs, traded away Tyrese Halliburton because they wanted to give the ball to De'Aaron Fox more. So it's like, do they take another guard? Do they, you know, reach for a big? Like, what do you think Sacramento ends up doing at four?
Oh, boy. That is such a good question. How many seconds of silence are you going to have to edit out? I don't know, man. Sacramento, what are they going to do? Yeah. So, like, they could do something crazy. Like, I could see them do something crazy and going after, like, Jaden Ivey because, like, points and fast, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I could totally see that.
It would be very Sacramento to be like, hey, we just traded Tyrese Halliburton, but what if we took Jaden Ivey?
Yeah, just like that's so Sacramento. Yeah. Or like, yeah, and especially I was just reading your big board earlier. Jaden Ivey, NBA player comparison, De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah. We have two of these guys.
We got to double up. Double down.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah, well, that's the funniest outcome, I think. So, yeah, let's say Jaden Ivey at four for Sacramento. So, are we going to pencil in Keegan Murray at five? Yeah. Are we going to, okay.
Yeah.
Are we going to entertain the thought of Shaden Sharp at five? Have you done any Shaden Sharp research?
The thing is, what to research, right? Like, what does research mean in this context? Like, have I read lots of words? Sure.
Yeah.
Like, have I read like lots of opinion pieces about his high school play? Yes.
Have you watched any of his EYBL
films? Sure. Yes. Clips and bits. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is that interesting and fun to watch? Yeah. Like, am I able to translate that in a meaningful way to the pros? I don't feel like I can. I don't feel equipped to do that. I think people smarter than me. If people are able to do that, they need to be working in the NBA. You know what I'm saying? I'm curious to hear what you think about that, because I don't feel like I have a handle on it.
I feel like that would be the pick that would make Twitter happy.
Yeah.
But it is – and, like, if it works, and if it works on both ends, like, Sharp would absolutely be a guy who could fit next to Cade Cunningham. Like, however – it's like strike one. It's like guys coming from high school directly to the NBA usually take a long time to get ready or to get to a place where they're contributing meaningfully at the NBA level. And oftentimes they don't make it that far.
Mm-hmm.
So, strike two. I think he's 19. So like, despite the fact that he's coming straight from high school, he's not like super duper young. Like he's pretty young, but like he's not as young as like Jalen Duren, for example. So it's like, you know, you think you have this like raw piece of clay, but he's like not nearly as raw as you think he is. He just like didn't play college basketball,
right?
And then yeah, there's no strike three. I don't have a strike three. That would make for a better listening experience. But like, yeah, if I think it'll be interesting. I think that will be the conversation I think we have amongst ourselves a lot over the course of the however long we've got until the playoffs end and the draft starts. So like 8 weeks or something. But yeah, I think Murray versus Sharp is going to be like the argument we probably end up having.
So over like and a, over and over again. In a 5-7 scenario, Laz, like him at seven, should he fall to that? Sounds way more interesting to me than like if you've got two swings, it seems interesting to me to take one of them on him. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's a great point. And I think that's something that is probably like why we do the mock draft exercise, right? Because like Indianapolis, if Keegan Murray's off the board, like would they take Shaden Sharp? They just executed the Tyrese Halliburton trade, so now they have Tyrese Halliburton. Mm-hmm. They also have Malcolm Brogdon, who I think was angling for a trade last I saw. Returning Miles Turner. So they don't need like a big, they need a wing. So, like, would they go with, like, an AJ Griffin, or would they go, like, with a Benedict Mathurin over Shaden Sharpe? Like, that's kind of the interesting question thing we've got going on. What do you think, Ben?
Okay, here's where I start to get fuzzy. Okay, we just said at five, who do we just pencil in at five? We penciled in us with Keegan Murray.
Yeah, we penciled in Murray for us.
Okay, at six, we start to think about Sharp. We start to think about, what are the other names that you just said? You said a bunch of them.
Sorry, start to think about, like, AJ Griffin.
Yes,
start to Griffin, think about Mathurin.
Mathurin.
Start to think about a guy like Tari Eason.
All these guys. This,
yeah. This is where stuff starts to open up a little bit.
It's like, okay, so this is the spot for me where, like, the guys, it's harder to differentiate among them, right? So the guy I've looked the most at is probably Mathurin, because worst case scenario is the Pistons drop to seven, right? And this is kind of where I prevented myself from digging much deeper than Mathurin, right? This is where I kind of stopped. So, like, among this group, Mathurin is the guy I like the best. So this is probably, if I'm picking six and Mathurin's still on the board, this is probably where I take this. That's probably who I take at six.
Yeah. Okay. So I just opened up Tankathon, like, six. They still got, like, AJ Griffin, Dyson Daniels, Mathurin, Jalen Duren, Johnny Davis, like that. All of those things, all of those guys, I think could be interesting for Indianapolis. Let's just, like, give them AJ Griffin.
Oh, AJ Griffin's still on the board too. Yeah. So he's universally probably rated higher. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're probably right.
Yeah, I'll say this. I don't, like, the Pacers are known for being lowercase c conservative in their, like, in the way that their front office and their team has been run. And so I can see them saying, like, the 19-year-old kid straight from high school, like, nah, we don't really want any of that. Indiana also kind of feels like they would rather, you know, be back in the play-in mix sooner rather than later. And so we'll see. I don't know if the Sharp kind of fits there. Which means you would still be on the board at seven for Portland. If Portland didn't trade that pick, I think they would also want to go a little bit more, like, instant impact role player type of situation. Mathurin doesn't make a ton of sense for them because they already have Anthony Simons and Damian Lillard, unless you think Mathurin can play some three guard, which I don't. And so then you're looking at, like, Tari Eason, it's like just like a run. They're gonna trade that pick.
who's left for them then? Like, nobody. There's not even a name. Like, who do you even draft? Like, I don't know. Yeah,
if you're looking for a because, like, they don't need any guards, right? And the closest thing we have to, like, a guy I think is gonna be good right away is, like, Benedict Mathurin and Johnny Davis, and those are both guards. So, like, they don't draft those guys. They don't have any centers. I think Nurkic is going to be a free agent. I don't know if they bring him back or not. So maybe they go, like, Mark Williams or something. Maybe they go Jalen Duren, right? And you just, seed the fact that you're going to be bad defensively with a 19-year-old center and just, like, tell him to just stand in one place and jump when Dame throws him the ball. And they're good. But
they're going to trade the pick, aren't they?
Yeah, they're definitely probably going to trade that pick.
They're either going to trade down or they're just going to trade out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Things did not shake Portland's way, which is good for us.
Yeah,
not so good for Portland. All right, that was as deep as I think we probably need to go.
Yeah,
I was going to go, like, past our pick and into Portland and just see how things shape out. But, like, yeah, just even doing that quickly, it's like, man, Portland. We learned that Portland probably is going to trade that pick, and if you think Shaden Sharpe is not the type of player that Indianapolis would select, like, getting Keegan Murray and Shaden Sharpe, definitely more interesting than just getting Keegan Murray for the Detroit Pistons.
And you definitely talked me into the idea that Keegan Murray could be the type of player that Portland could be interested in, or
he'd be off the board.
Yeah, he would be the only guy they would want. But, right, like,
that's true.
He's the only guy they would want. So if he's not available, there's nothing.
That's even more reason, I guess, for the Pistons to take him.
Right.
Kind of hold Keegan Murray hostage. Right. So they have to trade for Jeremy Grant. That's a funny thought. Yeah. Okay, that's basically everything I want to talk about with the draft. I wanted to get your quick thoughts. I know you've been watching the playoffs. What did you think of both the Phoenix Suns Game 7 collapse against the Dallas Mavericks? And did DeAndre Ayton only playing 17 minutes and there being immediately like a huge stink about how that situation is going in Phoenix give you any pause about whether or not you want him to be a Detroit Piston?
Wow. So, first of all, no. I mean, I'm not going to let one game in one series derail, his entire career today. He's an impressive player. Mm-hmm. He's the kind of player that I think anchors the interior, both ends of the floor. I'm very impressed with him as a player. I did find some of the post-series comments from the franchise to be at best non-committal, which I found sort of surprising. I did think there's potential there for us to swoop in. Of the guys who are available in free agency, he's the only one that when we talk about the potential maximum that could be offered to him, he's the only one that I would even be interested in entertaining that sort of an offer. So nothing that happened in the series would change my view of that. That's a team that for two seasons was at the very top of the NBA. And I don't think you can look at what happened in one game, really in game seven, and write off the entirety of what they were able to accomplish. It sort of reminded me in some ways of what happened to the Pistons, right? When the Pistons sort of aged out and LeBron sort of tore through them, mm-hmm. it's not directly the same, but you look at the way sort of Chris Paul just sort of just ran into a wall, right? Like it was just clear. He just didn't have it. It kind of reminded me what happened to the aging Pistons, and it was just sort of Luka's ascension. It was LeBron's ascension. And look, you can't say the Pistons are the Pistons. You know, nobody on those teams was worth it. No, that's not what happened, and that's not what happened to the Suns. So I wouldn't be worried about that. But what was witnessed on the court that night, I've never seen anything like it last. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And I could not believe it. I was absolutely stunned at what I saw.
Yeah, what surprised me was it was not how ready to go Dallas was from the moment the ball was tipped. Like that is to be expected from game seven, you know, in the second round in the quarterfinals, of a team that's like, you know, preparing to, you know, elevate themselves to the conference finals. It was striking to me how unprepared Phoenix looked to mentally to be in that game. It's like, and that is something those are words I never imagined myself using for the Phoenix Suns under Monty Williams. But like that's just the first thing that comes to mind. And then, you know, once the initial avalanche had occurred, it did kind of seem like, it seemed like each guy on the floor decided, like, it's like, okay, we're down. This is not the end of the world. We all need to play better. It's like, I'm going to be the guy who, you know, elevates this team. I'm going to be the guy who makes this happen. And so you'd get, like, Chris Paul misses. And then you get Devin Booker misses. Mm-hmm. And then you get Ayton missing. Mm-hmm. And then you get Crowder missing. And then you look up and Luka has hit, like, three step-back threes. And you're down 9 more points than you were before. You're like, oh, God. And like the snowball just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden it's halftime and you've been doubled up and you've scored less than 30 points and a half and your season's over. And it's like, that's kind of rough from a mental perspective. Like I don't begrudge anyone being like frustrated. I do think it's not nothing that DeAndre Ayton kind of was just on the bench, just chilling and only playing 17 minutes. But at the same time, like, I remember how engaged he was on both ends of the floor, like in the NBA finals last year, right? Mm-hmm. And like the hope is obviously you're paying, you know, $30 million, in excess of $30 million a year for that version of DeAndre Ayton. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, he feels more engaged and more engaged with the team because, you know, he's not ceding touches to a Chris Paul or to a Devin Booker, because if you're bringing him in and you're paying him that money, you're paying him to be like the second guy behind Cade, and letting Keegan Murray and Shaedon Sharpe just kind of fill in the gaps between them. But I'm not worried about the Pistons like going out and signing DeAndre Ayton because of one game, but I don't think it's nothing either, for sure. Okay. All right, Ben. Anything else from the playoffs you want to talk about? You want to mention anything else that's like stood out to you these playoffs?
How about former Pistons Spencer Dinwiddie, right?
That's a good point.
My goodness, one of Stan Van Gundy's best draft picks, and unfortunately,
I did see your tweets as like with the 38th pick, the Pistons select Spencer Dinwiddie. 39th pick, the Pistons select Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton. It's like, oh yeah.
Those second rounders that you give up on just a little bit too soon, like, I mean, that's part of why I'm not saying Killian Hayes is going to get to that level, but that's part of why, like, these really young guys, like, the Pistons have given up, like, one season or two seasons too soon on these young guys, on these really tiny contracts who all they do is take up a roster spot and you're going to lose anyway, like, we got time, guys. We got time to be patient.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's basically it. We're going to hit 35 minutes. I'm happy with that. Ben, let the people know where they can find you, where they can find your thoughts about, you know, maybe perhaps being in the future more excited about Keegan Murray.
I'm going to stay off Twitter for tonight. Not saying anything stupid.
We have a conference finals game happening right now. I'm just going to watch that.
That's right. Boston is surprisingly competing without Horford and Smart. Miami looks dead. They didn't show up so far in the first quarter. But at BR Gulker on Twitter. I'm going to dive into the middle of the top 10 over the next week or so. Try to convince myself of something positive to be had, which I know there is. I just got to get through the disappointment and find it.
Yeah, it is. It won't be as entertaining to argue about the top three versus like Benedict Mathurin versus Shaedon Sharpe, but we'll make it fun. We'll make it fun. We always do. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. I'm on vacation the week after this one, but like after that, I'll probably drop another big board and we'll have lots of fights about Shaedon Sharpe in the not too distant future. This has been the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. Thank you for listening to our post draft lottery episode, and we will talk to you guys sometime in the future. See you.